I want you to just picture a scenario. And it's a scenario I think every single person listening has lived through, probably in the last, what, month?
Oh, at least.
You have a plan, a really, really good plan. Maybe you mapped out a project at work, you know, down to the hour. Maybe you planned the perfect vacation. Or maybe it was just a quiet Sunday morning where you swore you weren't going to check your email.
The dream.
The dream. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and then...
the universe intervenes.
Exactly. The flight gets canceled. The project manager quits. The kids get sick. Or someone says something that just completely derails your mood. It's that moment when reality serves you a dish you definitely did not order.
And your reaction is usually one of two things, right?
Oh, completely. My reaction usually falls into one of two buckets.
Let me guess. Panic or paralysis?
Spot on. I either go into full fix-it mode, you know, running around trying to glue the pieces back together, or I just want to pull the duvet over my head and pretend I don't exist.
Yep. Fight or freeze?
But today, we're looking at a third option, an option that, frankly, sounds a lot harder than the first two, but infinitely more effective.
It is harder, but it's the only one that actually works in the long run. We are diving deep into Chapter 52 of the Raft to Freedom program.
And the title of this chapter is An Appropriate Response, Resilient Equanimity. Now, equanimity is one of those words that sounds lovely in a yoga studio, but feels like impossible in a traffic jam.
It does. But by the end of this deep dive, I think we'll see it's actually the most practical tool in the box. Before we get into the how, though, we need to orient ourselves. We're working through the RAF2 program, RAFT.
Right. And for anyone new to our deep dives, could you just remind us what that acronym stands for?
Now, of course. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, and Train. It's a framework for moving away from unhelpful habitual patterns and toward a life of, you know, genuine freedom.
And we are currently deep in the train stage.
We are. If you imagine the earlier phases, recognize, abandon, freedom, as building the raft to escape a dangerous shore, the train phase is about what happens once you're out on the open ocean.
You've left the shore of those old habits.
Right, but now you're navigating the unpredictability of life.
And the ocean doesn't care about your plans.
Not at all. You can't control the weather. You can't stop the waves. The only thing you can control is how you handle the ship. And this chapter is all about the captain's view, how to keep your dignity, your clarity, and your care intact when the storm hits.
See, care is the word that really stuck out to me in the reading because we've covered other heart practices in previous deep dives. We've talked about compassion, befriending, appreciative joy. Those feel warm. You know, they feel fuzzy. Equanimity, well, it can sound a bit cold, a bit detached.
I get that.
So why do we need this fourth one? Is it just the buzzkill of the group?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Think of resilient equanimity as the stabilizer. It's the fourth and final appropriate response, and it actually protects the other three. The RAP program makes a really strong point here. Without equanimity, the other virtues can actually become toxic.
Toxic. That's a strong word. How can compassion be toxic?
Well, imagine compassion without any stability. You care so much about everyone's suffering, you just take it all on. You feel every single ounce of their pain. What happens to you?
You burn out. Empathy fatigue. You get completely crushed.
Precisely. Compassion without equanimity becomes overwhelm. Or take befriending loving kindness. Without balance, that can turn into sticky attachment or clinging.
Okay, I see that.
And joy. If you don't have a grounding force, joy just becomes agitation or like manic excitement.
So equanimity is the gravity that keeps the other three from flying off the handle?
It's the container. And the definition the RAF program uses is really powerful. They define resilient equanimity as, I care deeply, even if I cannot control the outcome.
Wow. That is a massive paradox to hold in your head. Caring deeply, but releasing the result. Usually, if I care, I want to control. If I release control, it means I don't care.
That's the binary trap we all fall into. But there's an important distinction we need to make first. The program actually talks about two types of equanimity. We saw balancing equanimity back in Chapter 50. This is different.
Yeah, help me out here. I just assumed equanimity was, you know, being calm.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the balancing kind and this resilient kind?
So think about the raft metaphor again. Balancing equanimity is like the keel of the raft, that heavy fin under the water. It's an inner steadiness you build during meditation or quiet reflection.
An inside job.
Totally. It's about not tipping over when you feel pleasure or pain inside your own body.
Okay, so the keel keeps me stable internally. When my knee hurts during meditation or I feel a burst of anxiety, balancing equanimity keeps me from freaking out.
Right. But resilient equanimity, that's the sails and the view from the bridge. It's outward facing, it's relational, it's the capacity to stay calm, kind, and clear when you're dealing with a difficult boss, a family crisis, or a misunderstanding with a partner.
So balancing equanimity is for the silence, resilient equanimity is for the noise.
Exactly. It's the specific tool for the unfixable parts of life, the messiness of other people.
Which brings us to the trap, because I feel like when most of us try to be equanimous, if that's even a word, we get it wrong. The chapter talks about near and far enemies. This is a Buddhist psychology concept, right?
Yes. The idea is that every virtue has a far enemy, the obvious opposite, and a near enemy, which is a lookalike. It mimics the virtue, but it misses the point entirely.
Okay, let's stick with the captain metaphor. Who is the far enemy here?
The far enemy is control. This is the captain running around the deck, screaming at the waves, trying to force the ocean to be flat.
I know that captain. That captain is me at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday when the Wi-Fi goes down.
It's most of us. It's driven by anxiety. In the framework, they call this craving and aversion. I must have this outcome, or I must get rid of this problem right now. It's a total refusal to accept reality as it is.
That's the screaming captain. But the near enemy sounds much sneakier.
Much sneakier. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference.
Indifference.
This is the captain who locks themselves in the cabin, folds their arms, and says, whatever, I don't care if we sink. It's not my problem.
Oh, the whatever defense. I've used that. Fine, do what you want. See if I care.
Precisely. And here's why it's a trap. From a distance, the captain looks calm. They aren't screaming. They seem unbothered. So you might look at them and think, wow, they're so zen. So unshakable.
But they aren't zen.
No. Inside, it's a cool numbness. It's emotional frost. It's a defense mechanism where you shut down your heart because the situation is too painful or frustrating. You aren't finding balance. You're checking out. You're withdrawing your care to protect yourself.
That is such a crucial distinction because I think a lot of people confuse letting go with giving up.
Huge difference. True resilient equanimity stays on deck. It is warm steadiness.
Yeah.
You are fully present, you are looking right at the storm, and you care about the ship, but you aren't hijacked by the weather.
So you're not grabbing at the waves, but you aren't hiding from them either.
That's it.
Warm steadiness. That sounds infinitely harder than just checking out.
It requires courage. It's active, not passive.
The chapter uses this great visual of the supple raft. Can we talk about that? Because usually when I think of a strong ship, I think of something rigid, unbreakable, ironclad.
Right. But in the ocean, rigidity is a liability. Imagine a raft where every log is nailed down tight, absolutely stiff. When a massive chaotic wave hits that rigid structure, what happens?
The force has nowhere to go. It just snaps.
It shatters.
Hmm.
But if the raft is bound with rope, the rope of equanimity, it flexes, it moves with the water, it creaks, it shifts, it absorbs the shock. And because it yields, it remains intact.
So the goal isn't to be a concrete block. It's to be what, shock absorbent?
That's the resilience in resilient equanimity. The motto in the raft program is, we do not waste energy shouting at the wind, we adjust the sails.
I love that. We adjust the sails. This feels like a good time to bring in the historical context. The raft program draws heavily on ancient wisdom traditions.
Yes, and this is where we first see Gautama, the Buddha, mentioned in this context. He famously said that resilient patience is the highest ascetic practice.
Which is interesting because you usually think of ascetic practice as like fasting or living in a cave. But he's saying dealing with people in life is harder.
Dealing with unpredictability requires more discipline than sitting alone in silence. I mean, it's easy to be holy on a mountain. It's hard to be holy in a customer service line.
Ain't that the truth?
There's actually a very famous and frankly quite graphic teaching mentioned here called the Simile of the Saw.
Oh boy. I read this part. It sounds like something out of a horror movie.
It is extreme by design. Gautama taught that even if bandits were to sever your limbs with a two-handled saw.
Yikes. Just yikes.
If you gave way to anger or hostility in that moment, you wouldn't be following the teaching. The instruction is to maintain a mind free from hostility, even under that extreme duress.
Okay, I have to push back here. That sounds impossible. Bordering on delusional. If someone is sawing my arm off, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be hostile. Is this actually a realistic goal for a normal person?
It's not a goal in the sense that you fail if you feel pain or anger. It's a training metric. It's hyperbole to make a point. The logic is, if the ultimate capacity of the mind is to remain clear even while being sawed in half,
then you can probably handle a rude email from your coworker.
Put that way, the email seems manageable.
It's about perspective scaling.
Exactly. It's about not adding mental suffering to physical or situational pain. It's preserving your own mind no matter what is happening to your body or your surroundings.
So let's look at the mechanics of this. How does this actually work in our brains? Because when I get that root email, my brain doesn't say, be like the supple raft. It says, destroy.
Right. And the source material dives into the neuroscience of this. It's all about what they call top-down regulation.
Break that down for us. What's regulating what?
So you have the prefrontal cortex, that's your rational planning brain, the captain.
Yeah.
And you have the amygdala, the fear center, the alarm bell.
Right.
When we lack equanimity, the amygdala hijacks the system, it screams emergency, and it shuts down the rational brain to prepare for fight or flight.
That's the captain screaming at the waves mode.
Precisely. Equanimity training strengthens the neural pathway so the prefrontal cortex can stay online. It allows the captain to look at the alarm bell and say, I see the threat, I feel the adrenaline, but I'm not going to run around screaming. I'm going to respond wisely.
It prevents the hijack. It creates that tiny pause between stimulus and response.
And that pause is where freedom lives.
Mm.
Philosophically, this connects to so many traditions. The chapter references the Serenity Prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
It's a perfect summary of this chapter. Equanimity is the accept part. Courageous energy, which is another part of the RAFT, is the change part.
They also mention the Stoics.
Yes, Epictetus and the dichotomy of control. Suffering comes from trying to control things that aren't up to us. And then they mention Nietzsche's idea of amor fati, love of fate.
That's a step further than just accepting, isn't it? Loving your fate.
It is. It's not just tolerating the journey. It's embracing the obstacles as the material for your growth. As Marcus Aurelius said, what stands in the way becomes the way.
The wave that hits the raft isn't a mistake, it's the path.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm sold on the philosophy, but I need the manual. I need the practical steps. How do we actually do this on a Tuesday afternoon when everything is going wrong? The chapter offers some really specific tools.
It does. The first one is the serenity check.
Mm.
It's a quick mental sort. When you feel that tightness in your chest, that urge to fix or flee, you just ask one question. Is this within my circle of control?
And if the answer is yes,
then you act. You use your energy to fix it. You don't just sit there orming. You take action.
And if the answer is no, if it's the weather or the economy or someone else's mood,
then you use resilient equanimity to accept. You stop pushing against the wall. You save your energy for what you can do.
There's also a protocol mentioned, the 20-second self-balance protocol. I want to slow down and actually walk through this because I think we can skip over these things too fast. Let's say I've just received some bad news. I'm feeling the heat rise. What is step one?
Step one is name the tilt. You ask yourself, am I in control mode, meaning I'm too tight, anxious, grasping? Or am I in withdrawn mode, meaning I'm too loose, checking out, indifferent?
Okay, so I identify the enemy. I'm spiraling into control. What's step two?
Step two, breathe and soften one place. Just one. It doesn't have to be your whole body. Just drop your jaw or relax your belly. Or unclench your hands.
I think the soften one place advice is genius. It's hard to be mentally rigid when you're physically relaxing your stomach. It sends a reverse signal to the brain.
Exactly. It breaks the feedback loop. Step three, ask the question again. Act or accept. Is there something to do or something to be with?
And step four.
Take one values-based step.
What does a values-based step look like in practice?
It could be really small. Mm-hmm. It might just be taking a pause before hitting reply. Speaking gently, even though you're annoyed. It's one small move that aligns with the captain you want to be, not the captain the storm is turning you into.
I love that. It's manageable. There's another technique for training this capacity during meditation, which is focusing on a neutral feeling tone. This one fascinated me because it sounds, well, boring.
It is boring, and that's the point. Usually our attention chases pleasant things, sugar, praise, entertainment, or it runs away from painful things. That's the hedonic treadmill.
We're dopamine junkies.
We are. But by focusing on something neutral, like the sensation of your earlobes or the feeling of your hands resting in your lap, you train the heart to just be there. You aren't chasing a high or fleeing a low. You're teaching your nervous system that it's safe to just exist in the middle.
It's stability training, like doing planks for your mind.
Exactly.
Now, we have to talk about the phrase of ownership. This is probably the hardest pill to swallow in the whole chapter.
Beings are the owners of their karma.
Yeah, we need to unpack that because to the modern ear, it's your karma, can sound a lot like, not my problem, pal. You made your bed, now lie in it. It sounds cold. It sounds victim-blaming.
It can sound cold if you misunderstand it or weaponize it. But in the RAFE context, it's not about judging people. It's realizing a fundamental truth. You cannot live someone else's life for them.
Right.
You can care about someone deeply. You can help them. You can offer resources. But you cannot manage their life. You cannot force them to change, and you cannot carry the consequences of their actions for them.
So it's actually about boundaries.
It's the ultimate boundary. The RAFE program puts it beautifully. I can care, I can help, I can set boundaries, but I cannot live your life for you. It's actually a release of a burden that was never yours to carry.
And if you try to carry it?
If you try to carry someone else's karma, their choices and consequences, you both suffer. You get exhausted, and they don't learn.
That connects back to Gautama again, right? The advice to his son.
Yes. Gautama advised his son, Rahula, to develop a mind like the earth. The earth isn't offended if you throw flowers on it, and it isn't offended if you throw trash on it. It just holds it. It remains solid.
That is such a powerful shift. Instead of trying to vacuum the ocean, you just learn to sail the boat.
That's it. Resilient equanimity is the great stabilizer. It allows us to be the captain of the raft, realizing we are not the captain of the sea.
We are the captain of the raft, not the captain of the sea. I'm going to put that on a sticky note on my monitor.
It's the ultimate freedom. Because if your peace depends on the sea being calm, you will never be at peace. But if your peace depends on your own capacity to adjust the sails, that's something you can train.
Well, this has been a huge topic, and we've really only scratched the surface of what's in the chapter. For anyone who wants to go deeper, and trust me, there is so much more in the full text. This material comes from the RAFT to Freedom Workbook.
Yes, and we should mention that this incredible resource was created by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. They have done something really generous and made the entire 66-chapter program freely available. You can find it at raft2freedom.org.
That is an amazing resource. Raft2freedom.org. Definitely go check it out.
Before we go, I want to leave the listener with a self-reflection from the chapter, something to carry into the week.
What's the question?
Next time you hit a wall, ask yourself, When I don't get the outcome I want, can I notice what opens up if I release the struggle? What energy becomes available for the next helpful step?
That's good. Stop fighting the reality and use that energy for the next step.
Exactly. And to close, there's a beautiful blessing from the text. It's a Sri Lankan monastic blessing that perfectly sums up this balance of deep care and wise letting go.
Let's hear it.
This life is but a play of joy and sorrow. May we remain undisturbed by life's rise and fall. I care deeply about you, but you are the owner of your actions and their fruit, and sadly, I cannot keep you from distress.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next deep dive.